It's my very great pleasure to invite Orla back to Cambridge Law Faculty. She is no stranger here. She did her PhD here in the faculty, as much, I think, in European law as information law. And although you wrote on European data protection law, and you have this amazing monograph, The Foundations of European Data Protection Law, just out with OEP, you're also a consummate competition law specialist. And I suppose that the talk you're giving today on the consolidation of data sets, this issue of data monopolization, or the need for data plurality, is kind of bringing together those two strands of your work, so the competition law strand and the EU data protection strand, which I think will be enormously interesting. So without further ado, I will pass over to you, Orla.
Okay, thank you, David, and thanks to the Centre for inviting me, and thanks to you all for coming this evening, because I realise you probably have competing commitments coming into either exam term or, I would say, the lead into the weekend at this stage. So I do appreciate your attendance. And what I want to talk about this evening is very much a work in progress. So I have, I would say at this stage, more questions than answers. So I'm hoping we can have a lively debate afterwards, and that you can point out where I'm wrong in terms of what I've set out today. But what I plan to do today is really to show that in various areas of EU law, and I've looked at this predominantly from an EU perspective, we're getting mixed messages on the desirability of personal data consolidation. And as a result, you have different strands of law, and I think this is replicated at domestic level and also, for instance, in the US. You have different strands of law pulling in different directions when it comes to the question of the desirability of data aggregation. So the way I've kind of asked this question is, have we moved from a point where in data protection law, we have a strong indication that data minimization is desirable and data disaggregation is desirable? So can we take from that principle or those principles in data protection law a general obligation for data plurality? And I'll explain a little bit as I go on what I mean by that and how this might come to become an issue in practice. So I've structured the talk in four broad parts. So in the first part, I'll just recap a little, although I'm speaking to the initiated, on data protection law, and simply to emphasise that data protection law doesn't distinguish between data controllers on the basis of their size, but it is starting to take increasing, I would say, consideration of the scale of data processing operations. And then in the second part, I just want to briefly highlight that data consolidation, from the case law that I've come across in the area of privacy, seems to show a normative preference against data consolidation. And data consolidation is generally viewed under privacy law as a per se interference with the right to privacy. So I want to then combine those two parts. So illustrating that normative preference for data minimization, data disaggregation rather than consolidation, sits in contrast to what we see in another branch of law, which is increasing data consolidation through merger and acquisition activity. And this is where, as David has pointed out, this presentation ties into the general discussion on the link between data protection and competition law, the potential link. And what I will do then is just draw that out, or draw my proposal out, in the context of the Facebook-WhatsApp example, so Facebook's acquisition of WhatsApp messaging. And then I've said to consider the normative considerations, but they're essentially objections to the idea that merger control could ever take into consideration these normative indications or these preferences of data protection and privacy policy, and then to consider alternative avenues. So a lot of this I think in the first half, a lot of this is quite settled. I think in the second half, this is very much up for discussion. So EU data protection law, I'll skip through this very quickly, applies to personal data when processed, and then sets out your framework of safeguards, as well as rights for individuals and obligations on data controllers. What I really want to highlight here is that when you look at the definition of data controller, there's no reference to the size of the data controller when determining, for instance, the extent of the obligations imposed on a data controller. So it's simply the entity that alone or jointly with others determines how and why, or the purposes and means of personal data processing. And you can see here that on its face, it applies equally to public and private actors, with the exception, the big exception of state security. And that in this definition, there's no regard to the size of the controller or in the definition to the scale of the data processing operations. And the way that the data protection rules have been applied is to, is basically in keeping with that. So any attempt to limit to whom the data protection rules apply on the basis of the size of the data controller have been interpreted strictly. And I would say you see that in all of the case law on the purely household and personal activity exemption. So in cases like Lindqvist and Renish, you see that the court has been really reluctant to exclude anybody from the scope of application of the data protection rules. There's also been, and I think this is particularly evident in the context of the proposed proposed GDPR. So if you look at the Commission's initial legislative proposal, you see that there was a significant effort on the part of the Commission to remove a lot of obligations from small and medium-sized enterprises. So again, here we're talking about the size of the company concerned, determining the extent of their data protection obligations. The Commission's logic at the time was that these small and medium-sized enterprises with less than 250 employees shouldn't have the full force of the data protection rules weighing down on them. And you had things like distinct obligations when it came to the rights of the data subject, to information, the accountability provisions, the obligation to have a data protection officer. So littered or scattered throughout the initial proposal were these exemptions for SMEs. And they were replaced in the final version of the text, or removed from the final version of the text, on the basis of the recognition that the fact that a company is small doesn't mean, so the size of the company doesn't correlate to the scale of the data processing obligations. So you see that there is in fact now an emphasis on the scale of the data processing obligations. So the scale of the data processing also relates to the size of the data set, which is how this is relevant, in case you're wondering. And that is just one of the areas where you see that there is not an emphasis on the size of the controller, but rather on the scale of the data processing obligations. So you move from this kind of de facto starting point where data protection is unconcerned with size of the controller and is rather concerned with the scale of the processing obligations, or the scale of the data processing operations rather. And there is lots of support for that in the current Data Protection Directive and the GDPR. So most evidently, and I think the area where you see data consolidation clashing most evidently with the data protection rules is with the principle of data minimization. So in the 1995 directive and in the GDPR, we continue to have the principle that personal data must be adequate, relevant, and limited to what is necessary in relation to the purposes for which they're processed. So we're continuing to insist on data minimization, even following significant debate about the viability of that principle in an era of, you know, big data processing, Internet of Things. And I think if you look at, for instance, Facebook has recently commissioned a report on the future of the personal data ecosystem, and that's authored by a company called Control Shift. And there they question, one of their kind of questions going forward for consultation is whether or not there is any space in the present personal data ecosystem, if we can call it that, for this principle of data minimization. So although that principle came under fire and continues to come under fire, data protection law is sticking by it. Beyond that, there are other areas where you see that the quantity of personal data processed is relevant in the GDPR. So in the move towards a more risk-based approach that is evident throughout the GDPR, you see that when you look at what exactly might lead to riskier data processing operations, one of the factors emphasized is the scope of the data processing operation. So again there, you have an implicit recognition in the data protection rules that the more vast the quantity of personal data processed, the more risk that entails for individuals. And you see that, as I said, throughout the GDPR. So that's in the legislative context. The quantity of personal data processed is relevant to to the safeguards that apply, to the extent of the rights. I think this also follows very clearly from cases like Google Spain. So in Google Spain, when justifying its interpretation of the right to delete, the court emphasised in particular, first of all, the scale of the data processing operations. So it says that because of the quantity of personal data processed, essentially, search engines can provide a structured overview of information relating to individuals, and this concerns vast areas of individuals' personal life. So there's an emphasis there on the scale of personal information collected. And you also see in Google Spain that ubiquity is relevant. So, and I think what I'm still trying to decipher here, is ubiquity equal to the size of the data controller, which I've said before is not relevant, or is it simply, it's the reach, in my opinion, of the data controller. So again, it says that the effect of the interference with the rights is heightened as a result of Google's reach. So just to sum up on, well, sorry, before I sum up, I would say that this is also evident when you look at the Article 8 ECHR jurisprudence. So here, and I would be very grateful for suggestions on further relevant case law, but you see that the systematic collection and storage of personal information constitutes a per se interference with the right to private life. And that, I think, is consistently stated in the ECHR jurisprudence. So that's not quite tantamount to saying data consolidation. For instance, if two departments of government were to consolidate data, that's not quite tantamount to saying data consolidation is a breach of privacy, but it does say that systematic collection and storage is a per se interference. And the rationale for that has been made evident in a lot of the ECHR jurisprudence and also by the ECJ in Digital Rights Ireland. So in Digital Rights Ireland, you see that the court says that the aggregation of communications data permits very precise conclusions to be drawn about the private life of individuals. So you're able to, from this data, discern a detailed insight into somebody's private life, and that the retention of that data is likely to make individuals feel as if they're under surveillance. So you've got the justification for that prohibition on, or for that per se interference with the right to private life from data consolidation. So just to kind of sum up why I think all of this is relevant. So what I'm saying is that the scale of data processing operations is relevant when we are assessing the extent of the obligations on the controller through things like a risk-based approach. It's also relevant when you're considering the impact of data processing on the rights of the individuals, and I think that's apparent from Google Spain. So scale of data processing is important. If you're processing a small set of data, that is very different to processing a large set of data from a data protection and a privacy perspective. And I know that is entirely obvious to all of you, but I think that is the critical fact that is missing in all of the merger and acquisition analysis of that I'll talk about later. So in sum, you could then say that privacy law and data protection law displays this normative preference or this push for data minimization. And the question then is, when we see some sort of active data consolidation, for instance, through a merger, should a competition authority be obliged to take into consideration that data protection law and privacy law displays this normative preference or this push for data minimization? So to what extent are other authorities, when they are applying their respective rules, obliged to take into consideration that privacy law is enhanced and data protection law is enhanced by minimizing data collection? And I think, you know, I've just looked at this in the context of M&A, but you could also, this is relevant to other policy interests, most evidently things like innovation. And, you know, that's clearly a wider debate that is relevant here. So if we take that question, should a competition authority be obliged to consider data minimization when it is assessing a merger? Well, I think the first thing to note is that competition law has increasingly concerned itself with purely economics-based, efficiency-based concerns. So in the EU, there's also a concern with market integration. But when competition authorities are applying competition law, their primary concern is consumer welfare. And that definition of consumer welfare has been set out in a way that is based entirely on economic parameters. So I'll outline that in a minute. And so other concerns, things like sporting concerns, media plurality, the impact on regulated professions, the impact on data protection, are all at present deemed to fall outside the scope of the competition rules. So the first question I need to consider, and I won't go into this in much detail today, is whether there is a way of incorporating data protection concerns within the framework of competition law and saying when a competition authority is applying its consumer welfare standard, so when it's trying to enhance consumer welfare, is there a way there to say what will the impact be on individuals who have an interest in privacy or data protection? So if you look at how competition authorities define consumer welfare, they generally say that consumer welfare is enhanced when you have lower prices, better quality, wider choice, or newer improved products. So you see that there's an array of competitive parameters that are relevant. In practice, when applying competition law, competition authorities tend to focus on price, simply because it's the easiest parameter to gauge whether or not there has been a movement that might be detrimental to consumers. So you can roll in the economists at this point and they'll be able to assist you in determining whether or not there's been a competition interference. Clearly, in a world of products and services online, where we are not paying a financial price to access those goods and services online, this purely price-based assessment comes under pressure. And there's a question there about whether or not we should start to rely on the other non-priced parameters of competition, such as choice, in assessing whether or not the actions of particular companies are detrimental to consumers. So rather than saying, will Google's acquisition of Nest increase price for consumers, we could say, would it decrease choice? Now, the reason why competition authorities have shied away from that assessment is because they say choice is an incommensurable thing to weigh. It's very difficult to determine customer choice and what the desirable level of choice is, and that there's a risk that they would be overly interventionist and make false positive decisions if they were to intervene in those circumstances. But I would argue that there are ways that you can incorporate data protection considerations here on the basis of quality. So you could, for instance, consider whether an agreement between competitors to align their data use conditions could be treated in a similar way as an agreement between competitors to align their prices, because both might have the impact. So if competitors agree to align their prices, then that means consumers will be offered higher priced goods. But if consumers agree to align the data use conditions they offer to individuals, that means consumers might be offered worse data use conditions. So there is a way, in limited circumstances, once you fulfill all of the other conditions and requirements of competition law, there is a way to incorporate competition on data use conditions as part of the competition law framework. Has anybody done this yet? No. But recently the German data protection, or sorry, German competition authority has launched an investigation into Facebook's practices, arguing that Facebook took advantage of a position of market power by imposing unfair conditions on its consumers or on its users. And that was taken under the competition framework. The argument there, it's not clear whether they're considering that to be exploitative or simply that Facebook's actions led to a deterioration in the quality of the data use conditions offered to individuals. So we're starting to see some competition authorities dip their toes in the water here, but we haven't had any significant recognition of this so far. But what I think is distinct from what I really want to talk about today, because that's incorporating data protection concerns into the competition law framework. And you could see that that didn't happen in the Facebook-WhatsApp merger. So when Facebook wanted to acquire WhatsApp, it notified the merger to various national authorities and then requested that the European Commission deal with the merger. The merger was dealt with by the European Commission, and when considering whether or not to clear the merger and to allow Facebook to acquire WhatsApp, the Commission effectively defined several markets that it thought were relevant. So one market for consumer messaging products, another for advertising, etc. The key point here was that in the markets it looked at, it said that Facebook and WhatsApp were never competitors. So they were not competing because they provided different products to the market. So it said there was no overlapping products because it justified this on the basis that consumers multi-home. That when you choose to use Facebook Instant Messenger, you might still use WhatsApp for chats for different functions. And your use of Facebook Instant Messenger doesn't prevent you from using WhatsApp chat. Therefore, you multi-home as a consumer. Therefore, Facebook and WhatsApp's activities are not directly or indirectly competing. And they said, so there's no competition issue here. And here the merger.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yep. Well,
you said we were all thinking, right?
Yeah. So, well, effectively, I think if you look at this from a purely economic perspective, their economic activities don't overlap. Clearly, from other perspectives, this could prove to be problematic. So when deciding this, when saying that they weren't competitors on any relevant market, they focused primarily on the advertising market and said, well, WhatsApp doesn't advertise, so it can't compete with Facebook on the advertising market. Why do they focus on the advertising market? Because that's the only one where there are direct financial transactions or clear direct financial transactions. So what I want to show here effectively is that for the competition rules to take into account data protection considerations, you have to show that there's a competition issue. In the Facebook-WhatsApp merger, that was entirely sidestepped because they said they are not competitors, ergo there can be no competition issue. So it escaped all... It passed through without any conditions from a competition perspective, and there was no separate data protection or privacy analysis of the transaction. But you can see that, as I said, in that circumstance, the Commission is constrained by the confines of competition law, or DG Comp when it's applying is constrained by the predetermined parameters of competition law. The question I wanted to ask is whether or not, given that the competition authority in the EU, DG Competition, forms part of the European Commission, an umbrella organisation, which also comprises DG Justice, responsible for data protection. whether or not, on the basis of primary law, EU primary law, in particular the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights, when the Competition Authority acts, it is obliged to respect and promote the right to data protection. So, the Competition Authority might say, well, we are confined to our pre-established parameters for looking at this merger, but then that merger must be signed off by a College of Commissioners who take collective responsibility for any commission decision. So, what obligations does the EU Charter impose on that collective, the College of Commissioners, when they are signing off ultimately on the merger? So here, I guess you're all familiar with the EU Charter right to data protection, but it affirms that everyone has the right to the protection of personal data, of their personal data. And that right is given expression by the EU Data Protection Directive and soon the General Data Protection Regulation. And as I established at the beginning, that secondary legislation shows a strong preference for data minimization and for data disaggregation and a preference against data consolidation. So what does that mean? What are the practical consequences of the Charter right when you have a merger that proposes data consolidation? So here, I've just asked, you know, I think the two main questions here are whether the Commission could, for instance, accept a commitment from companies that might lead to the end of an infringement, of a competition law infringement, if that commitment breached data protection law. So let's think of an example. A company with a position of market power is refusing to give access to the personal data it holds to a competitor. And that competitor is saying, we're going to be forced from the market because this company is taking advantage of its dominant position. It has an essential facility that we need to compete and we can't access it. The essential facility being the data. So in that circumstance, one of the potential resolutions or one of the potential proposals that a competition authority could make would be to share the data, even though that sharing would breach established data protection law principles like purpose limitation, like data minimization. There, can a competition authority propose that? I would argue not, because then it would be in breach of its obligation to respect and promote data protection. Second question, and this is the one I've been kind of hinting at, can the European Commission clear a merger if that merger would, first of all, I think this is the easier case, lead to an infringement of the data protection rules? Or can it clear a merger if the merger is likely to lead to a deterioration in data protection law standards? And that's the really tricky question. And that, I think, was the question, really, that the Commission sidestepped in Facebook WhatsApp. Should note that the US Federal Trade Commission had also examined this transaction. And again, from a competition perspective, they cleared it without kind of further commitments on behalf of the parties. But what they did do with their consumer protection hats on, let's say, is send a letter to Facebook, WhatsApp, both of them as separate entities at that point, remind them of their commitments to users pre-merger, and say that if there were to be a change in their commitment to users pre-merger, then this would have to acquire the consent of individuals. So basically reminded them that they would be subject to notice and consent obligations post-merger, and that they couldn't simply throw the data sets together and not go back to users to acquire consent. And that was deemed to be a successful intervention on their behalf. Now, in the EU context, there was no such commitment acquired. So there were no data protection commitments secured. We'll come to why. I guess the obvious reason why no data protection commitments were secured was because, A, the Commission didn't think there was a competitive problem, and DG Comp said, well, we're not responsible for data protection. So you have an institutional issue here. So no data protection commitments secured. And it has been argued that there is no harm to individuals here from a data protection or a competition perspective. So I think the challenge is to think in this context, and this might not be the best exemplar, because Facebook and WhatsApp are now very much under public scrutiny following the transaction, but what could be the potential non-competition harms here that the Commission could have taken into consideration? It didn't. And I would say here that you've got two potential harms. Neither of them are, you're never going to be entirely sure that either are going to materialise. But the first potential harm is data consolidation. So we've already said here that in the context of the state, you have consistent Article 8 ECHR jurisprudence showing that data consolidation is a per se infringement of privacy. Here you have the potential consolidation of data sets going far beyond what most states could dream of, and yet there's no recognition that the data consolidation may lead to harms to privacy for individuals. Now, I would say here that you have all of the same underpinning concerns when it comes to the Facebook WhatsApp data consolidation as you do when it comes to data consolidation by a state. Yet that is not recognised at all in the merger proceedings. And then beyond that issue of whether or not the data consolidation itself is per se problematic, you also have a question of whether or not this will lead to a lowest common denominator approach to data protection. Insofar as, post-merger, both parties, or the combined entity, operating two services, let's say Facebook and WhatsApp, remain subject to data protection law. WhatsApp pre-merger was generally deemed to have a better data protection record, or track record, and was considered by users to be relatively privacy protective. What will happen post-merger? It hasn't happened yet, but you could have a you could have an alignment of WhatsApp data protection terms to those of Facebook, which would then result in an overall lowering of the data protection offered to individuals. So that might still, well, that won't, let's say, lead to a definite breach of the data protection rules, but it will lead to a race to the bottom in terms of privacy protection. So the question is that something you could take into consideration at this point? The US argument to that has been, even if post-merger the two companies align their data protection policies and that leads to a lowering of the level of control over information or rights over information given to individuals, as long as that respects the law, it's still fine. And in these instances, this won't happen without giving individuals choice. So you will be offered the opportunity to accept WhatsApp's new terms or to leave WhatsApp effectively. So again, the question is here, should the European Commission recognise that that is a potential harm to consumers? The fact that there will be data consolidation, or there may be data consolidation, and that then services will still comply with data protection law, but there will be an overall lowering in the level of data protection offered. Now this might go, of course, the counterfactual or the opposite is also possible. This might lead to a leveling up of data protection and privacy standards. So I'm working here in terms of worst case scenarios. If we recognise that those harms are, or if you consider that those harms are something that the European Commission should have been cognizant of and should have acted on, the question then becomes how. As I said, I think that the entry point here is probably the EU Charter, and to say that the European Commission as a whole is obliged to promote and to protect the right to data protection. Now, if you look at merger control, here, as I said, those particular harms, if I just go back to them for one second, those harms are not captured in any way by the consumer welfare standard the competition law applies. They are non-competition harms, so they won't be captured through general competition law analysis. So what you would be arguing for here is that these factors would be taken into consideration as part of a non-competition analysis at the point of a merger. This would mean that two companies or several companies notify a transaction to the Commission. DG Competition or a competition authority looks at this for competition concerns, but there will be a parallel assessment of whether or not the transaction would lead to a significant interference or a potential interference, whatever the threshold is, with the rights to data protection and privacy, or whether or not it would generate data protection and privacy concerns. So you're talking here about the introduction of a non-competition factor in an overall merger transaction. This might seem very odd, but there is precedent, and there's precedent when it comes to fundamental rights. So if you look at the merger regulation and merger practice across the EU and indeed across the globe, you see that there are established exceptions for media plurality. So if acquisition or a merger in the context of traditional media is likely to raise media plurality issues and lead to have a significant impact on opinion formation in a particular state, then that transaction can be blocked even if it doesn't pose any competition harms. Now, the question here is whether or not it is desirable to have a similar exemption or a similar potential break in place if a transaction raises potentially serious data protection or privacy concerns. So you would have that media plurality parallel. So what else could you do? Well, you could, at this stage, extract binding commitments from the companies concerned. And I think a question that is yet to be determined here is whether or not those commitments could hold a company to a data protection standard that goes beyond the minimum required by data protection law, so to actually hold a company to a higher data protection standard, which, to be clear, hasn't happened in the US. What the US has said is that we're requiring you to respect your pre-existing commitments, and if you decide to depart from your pre-existing commitments, we want you to notify consumers and to give them choice. Whereas here you would be cementing, let's say, the level of privacy and data protection in place. And another thing you could do, and this has been something that one of the former FTC commissioners has proposed on numerous occasions and has always been overlooked, the idea that in controversial mergers, or in any merger, in a data-driven market, that you would start to conduct ex post reviews of how the market looks from a non-competition perspective for consumers several years on. So this is something that Pamela Jones-Harper had brought up when Google first acquired DoubleClick in 2007. And she said that if you now, with the benefit of hindsight, look at the various commitments that were offered at that time by Google, they've all been swept away, and you see that a lot of the non-competition concerns that were voiced at that point in time have been overlooked 10 years down the line. So if we started to conduct more ex post analysis of mergers in data-driven markets, you would start to build an evidence base to see whether or not this actually does lead to longer term implications for things that are not competition concerns. You can see the print gets a lot smaller at this stage, and that's because the objections to this are so numerous. So the primary objection here, so for any kind of consideration of data protection and privacy in the context of a merger, is that we have data protection rules which apply after the fact. Therefore, why would we make a perhaps speculative assessment in advance, or a speculative judgment that a merged entity would breach the data protection rules or would lower data protection standards when we have data protection rules already applicable? You have the mantra that competition is just a click away. So if WhatsApp changes its terms and conditions to something that you no longer find palatable, you can simply move to a competitor of WhatsApp. There's concern about the introduction of political influence in objective merger proceedings. And here the concern is, from the privacy perspective in particular, is that data protection and privacy concerns can be quite subjective. They differ from individual to individual, and therefore you would risk ad hoc decision making if you started to introduce these concerns in this type of merger proceeding. And then, of course, the idea that, and this I think is one of the key problems here, is that from a competition law perspective, data consolidation is viewed as nothing but an efficiency. So if, and it's simply a different lens that doesn't recognize that and kind of doesn't compute that data consolidation might be considered problematic from a human rights perspective. So data consolidation is considered efficiency generating from an economic perspective, and that will always be assessed, but generally that's the kind of starting point. And therefore those efficiencies will be lost if you don't allow data sets to be aggregated. So you can see that there's a very fundamental incompatibility here in terms of data minimization and a preference for non-consolidation in data protection and privacy law when compared to competition law. You have a question of whether or not in this context you would be extending human rights obligations to private entities, and whether or not that is problematic. I personally don't see it as problematic in this case, because I think the rationale for doing so, the rationale for applying privacy obligations vis-a-vis the state, applies in the same way when you're applying these obligations vis-a-vis private sector entities in certain contexts. You also have increasingly evident that human rights obligations are imposed on private entities, most evidently things like anti-discrimination law. So I tend to downplay that one. But then I think the very tricky question, and this is something that is also at issue in debates on big data, is how much data is too much? Who gets to determine, who gets to put the kind of magic number on when a transaction could lead to the consolidation of too much information? And writing in a personal capacity, one of the FTC commissioners has spoken out very convincingly and vociferously against any kind of consideration of data protection and privacy in merger transactions, because she said companies will simply go away and make alternate commercial arrangements. So Facebook and WhatsApp, if they are not allowed to merge, they will simply enter into an agreement. They're not competitors, so it wouldn't be a cartel. An agreement to data share. And that would have the same effect on individuals as the merger. So the idea here is that the merger itself is simply a proxy for other forms of commercial arrangements that could arise in any event. So you can see that there's quite a lot of objection to the idea of incorporating data protection and privacy concerns into merger control. I wonder whether or not this is missing some of these objections are missing some of the point about this kind of structural impediment to choice. But maybe I can come back to that in questions. And then, of course, it's been argued, perhaps this is correct, that now is not the correct time to go down this road, because if the GDPR, or when the GDPR comes into force, we will have alternate routes to achieve more competition in data-driven markets. And that, I think, you could probably point to two aspects of the GDPR that people would say could achieve that. So most evidently, the right to data portability, which would give individuals the right to, if WhatsApp changed its terms and conditions, to port their data from WhatsApp to another competitor. So that would, to a certain extent, if not encourage more competition, it would certainly, because the question is whether there is another viable competitor on the market, but it would ensure that companies start to compete on the basis of the data use conditions that they offer to individuals. I think a limit of that is portability, at least from my understanding, doesn't necessarily amount to interoperability. So I could be unhappy that Facebook has acquired WhatsApp because I have zealously guarded my personal information and I didn't, made a conscious decision never to go on Facebook. And then Facebook is acquired by, or sorry, WhatsApp is acquired by Facebook. That transaction undermines my initial choice insofar as my data is now Facebook's data.
what are my remedies in this situation? Well, I can try and delete all of my personal data. I can have my data ported and deleted. But if I port all of my data, all of my friends are still back there on WhatsApp with their Facebook accounts. So the portability doesn't necessarily ensure the interoperability of me on my new instant messaging service by myself with my friends already on WhatsApp. So a lot of this has been kind of treated in kind of quite a simplistic way. Oh, portability will solve that problem, where it's not entirely sure that it will. But there are other mechanisms in the GDPR to encourage privacy and data protection as parameters of competition as well. So just to wrap up, I think you see here clearly on the one hand the data protection and privacy are showing this clear signposting that there is still an emphasis on data minimization and there are still problems with data consolidation from a privacy and data protection perspective. And that to a certain extent, those provisions are, and the ability of individuals to effectively exercise their rights in that sense is being thwarted by increased consolidation in data-driven markets. Competition lawyers will always argue that there is more choice available, but the question here is really whether systematic mergers and acquisitions, particularly in industries where business models are quite limited. So it's either you advertise and collect personal data in order to target advertise, or you, as WhatsApp did, offer your service for free to the majority of your users in the hope that a bigger company will come along and acquire you, and that will then kind of deal with all of your sunk costs and expenditure. So is that consolidation overall? Well, first of all, do you think that's a reality? And is it problematic? And I think that when it comes to dealing with this issue, you can really see the two, kind of lines being drawn in the sand of people are either coming down on the side that we need to start looking at this issue from a more holistic perspective. So we need more joined up thinking about consumer protection, data protection, privacy law, competition law. And those on the other side who say each area of law is a sealed area of law, and to allow other factors or other non-competition factors in particular to intervene is to detract from the purity of that area of law and is going to kind of muddy the waters too much. So you really do here have, I think, a dividing line between those who think that a holistic approach is preferable and those who say each area of law has to remain kind of siloed in order to ensure coherent and effective outcomes. Okay, so I will...